Okay, so you are running the mic, right? You are running the recording. Aaron, of course.
We started. So
yes. I'll start it again by saying that this is the 10th Naman interview, recorded on the 21st of April, 2010. Naman interviews are a series of discussions with personalities in the domain of human-computer interaction with ideas that deserve a closer look. My name is Johannes van der Meulen of Naman, and today we have Norbert Streitz of the Smart Future Initiative out of Darmstadt, Germany. Thank you for coming. I'll briefly give the audience some background on yourself. Norbert Streitz has an interesting dual PhD in physics and psychology, and is a senior scientist and strategic advisor with almost 30 years of experience in information and communication technology. He's the founder and scientific director of the Smart Future Initiative, which was launched in January 2009. This new activity of Norbert succeeded more than 20 years at the Fraunhofer Institute in Darmstadt, where he held different positions as division manager and deputy director. He has edited 17 books and co-authored about 120 technical papers. And his research activities cover a wide range of areas, going from cognitive science, ergonomics, human-computer interaction, to hypertext, computer-supported cooperative work, ubiquitous computing, ambient intelligence, interaction, experience design, all this in the context of, often in the context of hybrid, that is real and virtual worlds, and most recently, what we were discussing today quite a lot, smart cities. He was involved in many EU-funded research projects and activities funded by industry, and regularly serves on the program committees of national international conferences and on international editorial boards. So the topic of your talk here at Naman today, this afternoon, is the city of the future, the role of innovative human-computer interaction paradigms. There's a lot of talk about disappearing computing. How can computers disappear suddenly?
Thank you for inviting me, and it's a pleasure to be here at Naman in Brussels. Regarding your question about the disappearing computer or how computers can disappear, there are two ways we discriminate the type of disappearance. One is what we call physical disappearance, what usually people also understand in terms of miniaturization. Things are getting smaller and smaller and can be embedded into the environment, but also in your clothes that you're wearing, or you get it under your skin, or even can swallow a capsule and have it inside your body. The other type of disappearance is a little bit more complicated. We call it mental or cognitive disappearance, which means that the displays or the type of computer devices are still visible, but they are not conceived as computers anymore. But for example, take a table which we integrated with a display. It's not conceived as a computer in the table, but as an interactive table. So the artifact, the physical artifact, is in the foreground, and then the functionality is added to it. Or the next version would be, for example, that you have interactive tablecloths, which you can put on the table, and therefore then it's completely invisible in terms of a computer device.
Your current focus lies on smart environments, particularly in cities. Why are cities so important? Don't people want to move out to the countryside?
No, there are a lot of statistical data which are showing that already at the end of 2008, half of the world population was living in cities or metropolitan areas. And that's also what we call an urban age we are living in or moving towards. And the other aspect is that if you take, for example, a metropolitan area of Tokyo, which has about, nobody knows exactly, 33 million inhabitants, This is larger than the population of Canada, so a pretty large country, although not so densely populated. So cities are, on the one hand, becoming a focus of attention because people from rural areas are expecting a better life in this area. But on the other hand, they are becoming more and more also the prominent centers and the focus of attention for decision makers, opinion leaders. So the future of our world will be decided in cities.
If you move about in these cities, I think much what is appreciated about cities is that you can be anonymous in there. Now, if you move around in a smart city with sensors that detect your every move, can you still be anonymous?
Of course, there are ways still to be anonymous, but you're touching on a very important issue, which is the privacy. And I mean, being tracked by sensors in a building, but also outside in urban spaces, in public spaces, is a danger which we are facing and we have to concentrate on in terms of having it embedded in the design from the very beginning. So it shouldn't be a post hoc design decision to say, oh, okay, let's add some privacy to the already existing system. So what we are doing is that we are looking at the functionality, how much information is actually needed to provide a smart service, and only require that kind of information which is actually needed, and not just having a whole profile of a person. A good example is, like in the past, you could ride a train by going to a counter, buying a ticket with cash, and so nobody would know your credit card, your person details, your name, etc., and you could still use this kind of transportation. Today, things, when you book them over the internet, are getting much more personalized. But in general, you're touching on the issue of the type of support I can get. So the more information I provide to the system about me, my preferences, my intentions, of course, I can get more support. But sometimes I only want to get a limited type of support, and this requires less information, and we can also be, in that case, almost anonymous in this kind of context.
You've said, or you've written, that smart spaces make people smarter. How do they?
Yeah, I'm referring here to the situation of how you can provide smart system support, say, in a building or also in a smart city. And of course, the type of information you're collecting via sensors that are being aggregated later on and then being exploited in terms of some kind of action which is more or less automatically provided to the user or to the inhabitant of a building, the technology people are more interested in providing automatic solutions. And a good example is like the smart refrigerator, where you have the option that whenever an item is depleted, it will be ordered automatically, or if, say, the milk is going beyond the date and getting sour, that it's also being ordered. But there might be a change in your diet and change in your schedule, so you just want to eat something different. So it will be very difficult to synchronize the automatic system with your intentions and your personal preferences.
Right. So machine and human need to trade control depending on the situation, depending on the context.
Yeah, of course, it would be possible, but this would require a more elaborate programming of the smart refrigerator, quote unquote. And it would also have a much more elaborate knowledge base and things like that. So, but what we are proposing is to contrast this system-oriented importunate smartness with what we call people-empowering smartness. And this means...
When you say importunate, you mean overly insistent or...
Yeah, that it's kind of at the level even of being annoyed by the system.
Annoying, yeah, right? Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so the idea is to have a human empowering smartness, which requires that the human is in the loop. And so, of course, we would like to exploit the options and the possibilities the smart system can provide, because we don't want to be involved at very low level of aggregation of data and making decisions. But at a certain level, the system should provide us with suggestions or recommendations, and then we make the decision. So we are as a human in the loop. And now coming back to the original quote you said, smart spaces make people smarter, which means I can make now more informed decisions on the basis of this kind of sensor data which are being aggregated and provided to me. Of course, it's not an either or. Some aspects will be automatically controlled, others will be more human loop controlled. And so we have a combination of these.
I see the city as very much a social space where people meet on the sidewalk, on squares. They run across each other. They look into each other's eyes, or they don't. They are partly anonymous, partly very well known to each other. How can technology play on that very fundamental human social need in a city where people are necessarily close together and physically in physical distance?
Yeah, the idea here is to take some of the functionality which is currently going on in the virtual world, so you have social networks, etc., and transform this in such a way that it can also be used in real space. That's also why we call this type of smart city a hybrid city, because it's alluding to the connection of real and virtual worlds. So you could have, say, a social network which you have established in the virtual world, and when you're outside in the real world, you can benefit from this also by near-field communication or other types of communication which are locally available. And the idea here is to provide additional support for groups or friends exchanging ideas, making recommendations, suggestions about places where to go, but doing this in the real context of the real urban space. Another aspect would be to provide awareness about things or activities which are not visible to our human senses, and using so-called ambient displays, which can be in the form of sound displays, but also illumination, light displays, or other types of modalities, providing information as an experience, like about the level of pollution or the level of activities in a building or in the city, etc.
Right, and where there would be a challenge for also designing this type of information display so that people can intuitively understand, or somehow it's understandable from their experience, from their point of view. Has any work been done in that domain in designing these kind of ambient displays?
Yeah, there have been not so much at the urban scale level, but more large displays within buildings. But some of the design principles can be easily extrapolated to the more larger scales. So, for example, there's an interesting cooperation between artists and designers, and this area is called informative art, where you use certain patterns and viewing habits people know from art and transform this into the design of visual patterns in order to express certain parameters about our environment, for example.
If the technology disappears and becomes invisible, how can you, it becomes more difficult to discuss and for example, to advertise for it. How does that work? How is that going to work, do you think? You know, if it's not visible, how can you talk about it? You cannot see how what it is doing because it is invisible. Would there be solutions available to that problem?
Here you're touching on a very interesting issue because, of course, when you have a PC or a laptop or a mobile phone, you have an artifact, you have an object you can show. But on the other hand, you see that a lot of advertisement is not so much anymore focusing on the artifact or the object. They're more interested in conveying certain experiences or feelings or lifestyles. So sometimes the object which is being advertised is not really actually shown anymore. And so I think the same will and have to apply in this area, because also for a good reason. You're not interested actually in selling a disappearing computer, but you are interested in selling or advertising a service, an opportunity, a functionality,
yeah.
Values. So it's not really important for the people to see what is behind the walls or inside the object.
Yes.
So you can show, for example, a living room, and the living room might look the same as it looked 20 years ago, but all the objects within the living room are now smart, are connected, are talking to each other. And you could illustrate this with, say, some almost transparent light beams, which you're showing. But this is just a metaphor that they are all connected to each other. More important is that you show what is the added value for you being in that space, in this kind of experiencing the different functionalities and services.
We've all seen, I think, in major cities, high-rise buildings receiving some sort of decoration that is very digital. How does that fit into this picture? I mean, how interesting is that, or is that just, are those just gadgets?
I mean, some of them are probably gadgets which are used by the company who owns the building in order to advertise itself. Like you have the running name around the building or something like that. There are other projects of these so-called media facade installations, which are addressing issues of artistic expression. So usually there's a technology installed, and this is very different from building to building. And so then an artist gets the contract to do an installation in terms of the content which is shown. But there are also interesting models of user or citizens' participation in the following way, that you can create messages via SMS or some kind of interface on a website. And then this content which the user, the citizen, is creating is being shown then on the building. You can also use this in order to communicate maybe certain ideas or social activities. So a lot of things you could also show, for example, the level of pollution in that city and make a pattern out of it and things
make
like that.
Make it to bring some long-term value, because now these are often short-term displays where people indeed can send an SMS with a message to somebody else. But that's, of course, that's not very long-term, it's short-lived, and it would be nice to find applications of these media facades, as you call them, that are sustainable and can last for years. Why not?
Yeah, but on the other hand, I think I wouldn't put this too much down. It's short-term, temporary. On the other hand, it gives the citizen a feeling that he participates in this kind of thing, and not that he owns the building, but he owns the facade for a certain period of time. And so he contributes and participates in the city. And I think that's interesting. And you could then, of course, combine this, which is not yet done so much, with sensors or so, and then getting some other added value, which could be useful as you illustrated it.
True enough. Well, Norbert Streitz, thank you very much for your time, and good luck.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure to be here.